We hope this message from Word of Life Church and Pastor Brian Zahn is a blessing to you.
Well, today the ancient and mysterious story of God is the story of Jacob. I've entitled the sermon or the story, The Son of Laughter. It's a title that I'm borrowing from a book by Frederick Buechner that will play a role in our storytelling here in a little while. But you might be able to figure out why something pertaining to Jacob, a book or a story or a sermon about Jacob, might be called the Son of Laughter. Simply, that's who he is. Abraham gave birth to, well, Abraham and Sarah. Sarah had a lot to do with it, of course. Abraham and Sarah had a child, Yitzhak, Laughter, Isaac. And then Isaac and Rebekah had twin sons. One of them is Jacob. So in fact, Jacob is the son of Yitzhak, the son of Isaac. Or you could say it this way, Jacob is the son of laughter. And so that's the title. Now at the center of Jacob's story is the story of how Jacob becomes Israel. We're going to read our text in a moment and you'll see that there is this name change. A man whose name has been Jacob, at midlife, he has a change, and he's given a new name, and that name is Israel. Now, Israel is one of the most important words, names, ideas in all of Scripture. The name Israel appears over 2,500 times in the Bible. That's stunning. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that the Bible, in fact, is the story of Israel. You can tell it like this, that God begins to set the world right by making promises to a man named Abraham, who by faith fathers a son that is Isaac, who by faith fathers a son who is Jacob, who becomes a father of 12 sons, each the father of a tribe. These become the 12 sons of Israel. And the whole history of God electing Israel in order to bless and redeem humanity is the story the Old Testament tells. It culminates then in the birth of the true seed of Abraham, the true son of David, the true Israelite, who is Jesus the Christ, who then expands what it means to be Israel. So that now it's no longer based upon ethnicity and circumcision and Torah observance, but now Israel means to believe in Jesus Christ, to be baptized in His name, and to live under His lordship. That's the story of the Bible told large. Today our objective in storytelling will be more humble, more reduced. And we're going to look at Jacob and the first mention of the word Israel and how he came to bear that name. Because the story of Jacob and his receiving a new name and becoming Israel is really the universal story of how people like you, like me, become the people of God. So that without exaggeration, I will say that Jacob's story is our story. Jacob's story is your story. And now for the text. Genesis chapter 32, verse 24. And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." He said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The Hebrew patriarchs, the fathers of what will be known as Israel. As I mentioned, Isaac and Rebekah had twins, fraternal twins, not identical twins. They looked different, they were different, these two boys, born at the same time. We call them Jacob and Esau, except it shouldn't be Jacob and Esau, it should be Esau and Jacob, because Esau was the firstborn. But Jacob was hard on his heels, as one might say. In fact, we're told that he was born second, following Esau, clutching the heel of his brother Esau, holding on to his heel. He came forth from the womb. And so they named him Yaakov, means heel grabber, heel catcher. They said, oh, this one came out of the womb holding the heel of his older brother as if he was trying to get ahead of him right from the very beginning of life. And so they called him Yaakov, Jacob, heel grabber. And by implication, the name would be supplanter, place taker, people user, fast talker, huckster, hustler. You know the kind of person I'm talking about. The person that is always sizing up everyone they meet and trying to work an angle. They meet a person and they think, is this person useful to me? Do they have something I want? Can I manipulate them for my own advantage? If someone is ahead of them in life, they want to grab a hold of them and pull them back so that they can be in first place. They go through life fast talking, using people, working out a deal all the time to their advantage. That's Jacob, the heel grabber, the hustler. Now, the first half of Jacob's life, he made his way by hustling everybody he met. He used people. He wanted to be a success. S-U-C-K-C-E-S-S. That's the way he approached life. Everything was to revolve around him. He wanted to be successful. And so he manipulated people. He was born clutching the heel of his older brother as if he couldn't stand to be in second place and he had to be in first place. I said the two boys were very different. Fraternal twins, they didn't look alike. Esau was hairy. Lots of hair. All over his body, a hairy guy. And he loved the outdoors, an outdoorsman. He smelled of the outdoors. He loved to hunt wild game. Jacob, on the other hand, he's a smooth man. Smooth talker, smooth skin. Everything about him is smooth. He's just too smooth. You ever been around somebody just too smooth? That's Jacob. And he wasn't much for hunting wild game. He was more at home in the kitchen. One day his brother Esau comes home after the hunt. And he's famished. He's faint with hunger. He feels like he's about to die from hunger. And it just so happened that Jacob in the kitchen had just made a bowl of stew. Jacob saw the weakness of his brother, said, I can take advantage of this. And he said, hey there, dear brother, all faint from hunger are you? I'll tell you what, let's make a deal. I'll give you my bowl of stew if you'll just sell me your birthright. And he took advantage of his brother's weakness. And Esau ends up trading his birthright for a bowl of stew. Because Jacob, people user, place taker, heel grabber, took advantage of him in a weak moment. Later, with the help of his mother, Rebekah, Jacob hustled his dad. Isaac was getting ready to bestow the blessing of the firstborn. Of course, that would fall upon Esau. But again, Jacob cannot stand to be in second place. He can't stand for somebody else to be blessed. He has to be the one being blessed. And so Jacob, the hustler, with the help of his mom, run a con on Isaac, who's almost blind by now. And they put goat skin on the arms of Jacob so that when blind Isaac feels him, he might feel like Esau. Jacob hustles God, hustles his father and steals the blessing. Now when Esau hears about this, he's infuriated. He says, well, now this is now the second time that he's stolen what is rightfully mine. First he stole my birthright, now he's stolen the blessing of the firstborn. I'm going to kill him. And when word got out that Esau was mad enough to kill his brother, well, Jacob makes a run for it. He leaves Canaan, he leaves his family, he goes to Haran. And he works for his brother, well, his uncle Laban. Now Laban was also another kind of the same ilk. He also was a hustler, a huckster, a man that could run a con. You know, if you go through life cheating people, don't be surprised if you get cheated. If you go through life using people, don't be surprised if you get used. If you go through life taking advantage of people, don't be surprised if you get taken advantage of. You reap what you sow, you know. And so what happened? He was there. He fell in love with one of Laban's daughter, his beautiful daughter, Rachel. And the father said, well, you know, you just can't marry her for nothing. I'll tell you what, you work for me for 7 years, and she can be your bride. And he worked for 7 years, so smitten, so in love was Jacob with Rachel. And finally the 7 years had gone by, and it was time for the wedding, and they're under the canopy. And Laban brings forth his beautiful daughter, Rachel. But she's veiled. That's how they would do it. She's veiled. The ceremony is conducted. They're taken away at night to the wedding bed. And in the morning, Jacob wakes up next to Leah. He'd been conned, taken advantage of. The father had switched daughters on him. He said, well, I can't marry the younger before I marry the elder. And so the one that he wasn't in love with is the one he's married to. And he has to work another 7 years for Rachel. And then he works yet another 6 years. And all the time, Laban and Jacob are taking turns cheating each other, taking advantage of one another, stealing from one another, running some sort of con on the other one. 20 years, he lives like that. So we see that Jacob hustles his brother, and he hustles his father, and he hustles his uncle. He even hustled God when he was fleeing from Esau on his way to Haran. He slept the night there at Bethel. And in a dream, he saw a ladder going up to the sky, up to the heavens, and God at the top of the ladder, the angels ascending and descending upon the ladder. What does Jacob do? Does he worship? He doesn't worship. He climbs the ladder and grabs God's heel and says, God, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. Here's what I'm going to do, God. If you will make me successful, if you'll make me rich, I'm going to give you, watch this, God, I'm going to give you a tenth of everything. See, it's nothing like what Abraham, his grandfather, had done when he gave a tenth of all as an act of worship to the Most High God. Oh, that's not what Jacob does. Jacob thinks, I can work this to my advantage. I'll make a deal. If God will guarantee that he'll make me rich, I'll give him a tenth. If you make me rich. So this is Jacob, the hustler, the fast talker, the people user, the place taker, hustling his brother, his father, his uncle, and even God. But after 20 years of living in Haran, he thinks, okay, now it's time for me to go back home. I need to go back home. He's had enough of playing games with Uncle Laban, and He wants to come back to Canaan. And so they depart. Now he leaves with his two wives, Rachel and Leah. They're 11 children, 11 sons. There will be a 12th one to be born. Benjamin is not yet born, but he will be born later. And in fact, Jacob is rich. He has become rich. He's become successful. He's on his way back to Canaan. They travel for many days. They travel at a leisurely pace. They have little children. They have their servants. They have their flocks. They have their herds. But finally, he reaches the border of Canaan. They set up camp. A messenger comes. Your brother Esau will meet you tomorrow. He's near. That's all the message he had. He knew that on the morrow he would meet his estranged brother who had sworn 20 years ago to kill him. He doesn't know what the dawn will bring. Will there be reconciliation with his brother, or will his brother exact his revenge and kill him? The sun sets. Jacob is troubled. He's worried. He leaves the camp. He crosses the little Jabbok Creek. It's a mountain stream flowing down from the hills. It's called the Jabbok because that's the sound it makes. It's a gurgling mountain stream. Jabbok, Jabbok, Jabbok. He crosses the Jabbok to be alone by himself. He's in the night. He's in the dark. He's alone. He's a worried man with a worried mind. He doesn't know what tomorrow will hold. Will his brother kill him? As he sits alone in the darkness on the other side of the Jabbok, that's when this event occurs. That is our text. That results in this middle-aged man going through the ultimate midlife crisis. That changes him forever. It changes his name. It changes his identity. There's so many things we can say about what happens there. But know this much in advance. That after what happens at Jabbok, Jacob never again tried to cheat anybody. He never again tried to hustle anybody. He stopped being the person that tries to use other people. He was a changed man after what happened. But how to tell the story of that night where there was a struggle? Well, I'm going to go up to my story chair. This is our story chair. If you see me on this chair, we're going to have a story. So it's story time, boys and girls. But I am enlisting help today. Rather than just try to tell the story myself, again, it's going to be a first-person narration. But this time I am enlisting the help of, well, I think probably the greatest living Christian storyteller, Frederick Buechner. He's 80 years old now. He wrote a novel on the life of Jacob called The Son of Laughter. That's where I have the title. And I'm going to open to the middle of the book. And I'm going to read you the last part of the chapter entitled The Face of Light. I've set the scene. 20 years have gone by. Jacob's coming home. He's successful, but he's afraid what the morning will bring. He's going to meet his brother Esau. He doesn't know what will happen. He's alone. He's by the Jabbok. He's with his worried mind. He's in the dark. And now Jacob himself tells the story. Out of the dark, someone leaped at me with such force that it knocked me onto my back. It was a man. I could not see his face. His naked shoulder was pressed so hard against my jaw, I thought he would break it. His flesh was chill and wet as the river. I got my elbow into the pit of his throat and forced him off. I threw him over onto his back. His breath was hot in my face as I straddled him. My breath came in gasps. Quick as a serpent, he twisted loose, and I was caught between his thighs. The grip was so tight I could not move. He had both hands pressed to my cheek. He was pushing my face into the mud, grunting with the effort. Then he got me on my belly with his knee in the small of my back. He was tugging my head up toward him. He was breaking my neck. Just as my neck was about to snap, I butted my head upward with the last of my strength and caught him square. For an instant, his grip loosened and I was free. Over and over, we rolled together into the reeds at the water's edge. We struggled in each other's arms. He was on top. Then I was on top. I knew they were not Esau's arms. It was not Esau. I did not know who it was. I did not know who I was. I knew only my terror and that it was dark as death. I knew only that the stranger wanted my life. For the rest of the night, we battled in the reeds with the Jabbok roaring down through the gorge above us. Each time I thought I was lost, I escaped somehow. There were moments when we lay exhausted in each other's arms. There were moments when I seemed to be prevailing. It was as if he was letting me prevail. Then he was at me with new fury. But he did not prevail. For hours it went on that way. Our bodies were slippery with mud. We were panting like beasts. We could not see each other. We spoke no words. I did not know why we were fighting. It was like fighting in a dream. He outweighed me. He out-wrestled me. But he did not overpower me. He did not overpower me until the moment came to overpower me. When the moment came, I knew he could have made it come whenever he wanted. I knew that all through the night he had been waiting for that moment. He had his knee under my hip. The rest of his weight was on top of my hip. Then the moment came and he gave a fierce downward thrust. I felt a fierce pain. It was less a pain I felt than a pain I saw. I saw it as light. I saw the pain as a dazzling bird shape of light. The pain's beak impaled me with light. It blinded me with the light of its wings. I knew I was crippled and done for. I could do nothing but cling now. I clung for dear life. I clung for dear death. My arms trussed him. My legs locked him. For the first time he spoke, he said, "Let me go." The words were more breath than sound. They scalded my neck where his mouth was touching. He said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." Only then did I see it, the first faint shudder of light behind the farthest hills. I said, "I will not let you go." I would not let him go for fear that the day would take him as the dark had given him. It was my life I clung to. My enemy was my life. My life was my enemy. I said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Even if his blessing meant death, I wanted it more than life. "Bless me," I said. "I will not let you go unless you bless me." He said, "Who are you?" There was mud in my eyes, my ears and nostrils, my hair. My name tasted of mud when I spoke it. "Jacob," I said. "My name is Jacob." "It is Jacob no longer," he said. "Now you are Israel. You have wrestled with God and with men. You have prevailed." That is the meaning of the name Israel. I was no longer Jacob. I was no longer myself. Israel was who I was. The stranger had said it. I tried to say it the way he had said it. Yisrael. I tried to say the new name I was to the new self I was. I could not see him. He was too close to me to see. I could see only the curve of his shoulders above me. I saw the first glimmer of dawn on his shoulders like a wound. I said, "What is your name?" I could only whisper it. Why do you ask me my name? We were both of us whispering. He did not wait for my answer. He blessed me as I asked him. I do not remember the words of his blessing, or even if there were words. I remember the blessing of his arms holding me and the blessing of his arms letting me go. I remember as blessing the black shape of him against the rose-colored sky. I remember as blessing the one glimpse I had of his face. It was more terrible than the face of dark or of pain or of terror. It was the face of light. No words can tell of it. Silence cannot tell of it. Sometimes I cannot believe that I saw it and lived, but that I only dreamed I saw it. Sometimes I believe I saw it and that I only dream I live. He never told me his name. The fear of Isaac, the shield of Abraham, and others like them are names we use because we do not know his true name. He did not tell me his true name. Perhaps he did not tell it because he knew I would never stop calling on it. But I gave the place where I saw him a name. I named it Peniel. It means the face of God. The sun's rim was just starting to show above the top of the gorge by the time I finally crossed the Jabbok. Bands of gold fanned across the sky. I staggered through the rocky shallows, one hip dipping deep at each new step and my head bobbing. It is the way I have walked ever since. From that day to this, I have moved through the world like a cripple with a new name. The name the stranger gave me that night by the river when he gave me his blessing and crippled me. And so Jacob, with a new name, limps into a new day. He'll limp the rest of his life. He limps forth to meet his brother Esau. And there's reconciliation. At one point, Esau, while being reconciled with his estranged brother, offers him a generous gift from his flocks and herds. But Jacob, now Israel, says, Esau, I have enough. Now those are words that the old Jacob, prior to Peniel, would never have spoken. He never had enough. He always had to have more, had to have more. I got to be a success. I got to be rich. I got to have more. But now he's seen the face of God. He's wrestled with God. He's been broken by God. He's been blessed by God. And he no longer sees people as things to use for his advantage. He at last has learned with a limp how to trust in God. And that's what that long night was all about. When he wrestled through the darkness with what he did not know, with who he did not know. He thought the stranger was trying to take his life. Well, the stranger was trying to take an old life. He thought the stranger was trying to harm him. The stranger was doing no such thing. The stranger was trying to save him. The stranger wanted to bless him. But first, the stranger had to break him. And so Jacob, hustler, place taker, people user, fast talker, smooth operator, has been broken. And he walks different. No more the arrogant strut of a man that knows what he's about and knows what he wants and knows how to get it. He's large and in charge. He doesn't walk like that anymore. Now, he walks with a limp. And there's a name for this walk with a limp. I call it dignity. He's no longer shamelessly trying to take advantage of every person he meets. He now knows of his own frailty. His own brokenness will never completely depart him. He now leans upon God. But in learning to lean upon God, he learns that he can trust God and he doesn't have to look to people to use them. He now will look to people to bless them. And that's what it means to be Israel. To be broken and blessed by God and sent forth into the world to be a blessing. And so he says to his brother, "My brother, I have enough. I just want to bless you. I just want to be reconciled." Many years later, after Jacob's 11th son, Joseph, through an amazing story of its own, has become a high court official in Egypt and is thus able to save the family during a time of famine, Jacob finds himself in the imperial capital of Egypt. And he's given an audience with the Pharaoh himself. I think it's hard for us to understand how ancient Egypt looked upon the Pharaoh, who was believed to be a kind of god on earth. Here is this single man who has complete control over the wealth of Egypt and the armies of Egypt. The old Jacob, prior to his midlife crisis at Peniel, where he saw the face of God, was broken and blessed. If he had been in the presence of Pharaoh, he'd have been working some deal. He'd have been thinking, okay, here's the most powerful. Here's the wealthiest man in the world. How can I get something from him? But that man died at Peniel. And that was a man that limped with dignity into the presence of Pharaoh. Now, in pharaonic Egypt, you did not even dare to look directly at the Pharaoh upon penalty of death. You averted your eyes, you looked down, you would not even dare to look upon him. But Jacob limps into the court of audience and he walks right up to Pharaoh, stretches out his old withered hands and lays them on Pharaoh's head. No one had ever done anything like that to the Pharaoh. I assume the only reason he wasn't struck down by the guards was because they too saw something of the greatness in this man. And with humility and dignity, he limps up to Pharaoh, places his hands upon Pharaoh, and blesses him. And walks away. He doesn't ask for anything. He doesn't want anything. He doesn't need anything. He has enough. And he blesses Pharaoh. And the false greatness of Pharaoh was met and blessed by the true greatness of Israel. And that's what it means for you, whatever your name is, to be a part of Israel. It means that you too have wrestled with God. Yes. In some of the darkest moments of your life, God was present. You say, where was he? He was so close you could not see him. Present even in the pain and in the struggle. No, he was not trying to harm you. But there was a brokenness that must come. But after the brokenness, then the blessing. And he sends you forth as one that carries the very blessing of God. And you go forth not to use people, not to manipulate, not to try to climb the ladder, not to grab anybody's heel, but you go forth to be a blessing because you have learned that you can rely upon God. That's what it means to be Israel. Many centuries later, the truest Israelite, the seed of Abraham, the son of David, would sit in the upper room in Jerusalem with his disciples. And he would take bread and break that bread and bless that bread. And give that bread. And say, this is my body, which is broken for you. And now Jesus himself invites you to come to his table of blessing, where you find broken bread and a poured out cup. And he says, this broken bread, it's my body broken for you. This cup, it's my blood shed for you. Jesus says, I am broken that I might bless you. And you're invited to come to this table and to find that blessing of forgiveness, a new beginning, fellowship with Christ, incorporation into his own body, the true body of Israel. Would you stand with me? You can encounter Christ at this table of blessing. If you've never come to a table like this before in your life, don't be afraid. You'll be offered a piece of bread with these words, the body of Christ broken for you. You'll be offered a cup with these words, the blood of Christ shed for you. Let faith come by what you hear. And believe that the body of Christ is broken for you and the blood of Christ is shed for you. Eat and drink the bread and the cup. And believe that in that moment, you are participating in Christ. And his grace and his mercy are being communicated to you. That's what communion is about. And everyone here is invited to come. Whether you come every Sunday or you've never come to this table, you're invited by Christ himself to come to his table. And Father, we pray over the table now, confessing our faith.